History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold, and they really don't have to go untold, as long as we're willing to take a few simple steps, like asking a few questions, being patient enough to listen. It really is amazing just how much can be added to our perspective and understanding. Our goal is to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in the process, not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we find ourselves inspired by these stories from our men and women in uniform. There's something pretty powerful in hearing from the people who lived it. But what about those who never came home to tell the story? Any regular listener to this program knows that more than 400,000 Americans lost their lives in World War II. The Korean War Memorial in Washington, D.C. now carries the inscribed names of more than 36,000, while there are more than 58,000 on the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Wall. Gold Star heroes tend to get a little more attention in May around Memorial Day, but for Gold Star families, every day is Memorial Day. And so many of those Gold Star families find ways to leverage their time, their talent, and their treasure to honor the memory of those heroes and to help the rest of us better understand the real price of freedom. We're going to hear from one such family today. If you've ever seen a larger-than-life bronze statue of a soldier in Mickey Grove Regional Park in Stockton, California, or an identical one unveiled earlier in Gold Country in Murphy's, California at the Ebbets Pass Veterans Memorial, you might just have wondered, how did that end up there? And not only are we going to answer that question today, we're going to hear a whole lot more from a husband and wife whose respect and appreciation for those who serve goes back to their own childhood memories of World War II and the impact it had on their respective families. If you've ever had a sip of Ironstone wine, I guess you could say that in a roundabout way, you've contributed to those memorials too. Thanks to my friend Carrie Sass, her magazine called Her Life, and a great article by Mary Raffetto, I learned a few more details about a story I think you're really going to appreciate as well. But to fully understand, it's always best to go to the source and hear from the people who made it happen. So we get to do just that with the husband and wife team of John and Gail Couts. And we'll follow that rule of ladies first. So, Gail, those are some really big statues with, I'm sure, significant price tags. They make a powerful impression on anybody who sees them. But where did that first vision for this come from?
The story there is we were hunting in Colorado, and our hunting guide had spent the day with us. And at the end of the day, we came in and we started chatting, and he said, oh, by the way, I'm an artist. Would you like to see some of my paintings? And I thought, yeah, be polite, so I'll look at them. And he just absolutely blew us away. He is extremely talented. John Cobalt is his name. And he said, I also do sculptures. Well, we saw some of his sculptures that he had done, and we liked this one very much, and we decided that we would like to bring it back and honor our veterans at the Murphy's Veteran Park, in Murphy's, obviously. And so anyway, that's what we did. We brought it back and set it up, and it is a park that is dedicated to the veterans.
And there's another one in Stockton as well, the same statue?
There's another identical one at Mickey's Grove Park.
And John, what do you think of when you see those statues? What does it signify for you?
Well, it signifies the fact that I had a brother that was very active in the war. And the war itself, the soldiers need to be honored. And so we're trying to do something for the veterans and honoring the past and keeping the U.S. strong.
And one of the things that, you know, has become more and more evident to me over the years interviewing World War II vets for 20 years all over the country is you see that really there's nobody alive today whose life wasn't impacted somehow, some way by the war.
Sure.
So I'd love to hear a little bit about the two of you and your background. How long you been married, by the way?
65 years.
Did he get that right?
He got it right. He's very well trained.
Who wants to tell me how you two met?
Go ahead, Gail.
Well, I was finishing up at what was then College of Pacific, now University of Pacific in Stockton. And we had been up skiing. It was Easter vacation. And they had warnings out. Anybody that can get out of the Sierras, there's a massive storm coming in. So for once, we paid attention, and we came down to Stockton. Well, there was hardly anybody here because it was Easter vacation. And so my roommate, who was there, and I decided to go to Lugo's Pizza Parlor. I will not call it a bar in public, but anyway. We went in there, and right away she met a really handsome guy and said, "Gail, can I leave you?" And I said, "Sure, go ahead." So because I knew the bartender, and he could give me a ride home. Well, in the meantime, he introduced me to this guy. And so anyway, that's how John and I met at the bar at Lugo's Pizza Parlor. But from there, we talked, and I mostly sat on the bench and listened because they were talking about they were going to blow up the bridge that went across the Calaveras River because the material was coming down in the flood, and it was backing up and making a dam, and it was going to flood the city of Stockton, and they wanted to save Stockton. So I mostly sat there quiet and listened. And in the end, when it was time to go close the bar and everybody had gone home, John said, "Can I take you home?" And I said, "Sure." Well, he said, "On the way home, would you like to run by my house and see it?" Well, we went down what was Live Oak Road, and the neighbor's house was flooding, and they were filling sandbags trying to stop the flooding. And so my first date with John was filling sandbags.
Wow. Maybe some other couples want to try that because it's worked out pretty well for you.
Right.
What happened to that other couple, by the way, your friend who left with the really handsome guy?
I think that, I don't know. She didn't talk about it.
But it sure worked out well for you. John, anything you want to add to that story from the other side?
The only thing, no, I'd add that this was Easter, and Stockton was about to go underwater in flooding. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talk about climate change, and there's been climate change forever, not man-made. And so we did a lot of sandbagging. And see, I was single, but I was also high school graduate. Mm-hmm. But I did not go on to college. I went to College of Hard Knocks. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the bartender was a good friend of both of ours, so all worked out.
I guess so. 65 years and counting. It's worked out well.
Well, and the rest of my story is they did not blow up the bridge, and Stockton did not flood.
Some people were probably
barely
wondering about that.
Barely.
But have you ever filled up sandbags since then?
Oh, yeah.
Why not?
And that's not code for anything else. That's just we're talking about the floods. So I want to hear about how you both experienced the war years, because both of your families were impacted by it. But maybe you can give us a little touch for people who haven't been to Murphy's and maybe they've never visited Ironstone Vineyards. What's your history there? How did that come about?
Go ahead, Mom.
Go ahead, Dad.
Okay. Anyway, well, we were dirt farmers. We grew up growing crops. And we were transitioning between row crops, which is what we built our operation on, tomatoes, bell peppers, cucumbers, grains, beans. Mm-hmm. And we were going into permanent crops, which was wine grapes, cherries, apples. And so in my lifetime, we'd done a lot of vertical integration in building our operation. We started from zero. So when we started planting grapes, I said, well, we need to look at doing a winery somewhere down the road. Where would we want it? Could be in Lodi, or it could be up in Murphy's, where Gail's family had a ranch and beautiful terrain, etc. So we said, I think we want to build it up here and build it within the history of the gold country and the Sierras. So
what year was that?
About 1980.
Uh-huh. Did anybody have a winery up in Murphy's before that?
There were three little tiny ones scattered out, Stephen O. and I'm not even sure what the other two were, but nothing in town. Mm-hmm. We literally, with Ironstone, we've changed the landscape in Murphy's and the Sierras. And there's a lot of other little towns up and down the Motherlode and the Sierras that are trying to copy Murphy's. So we left our mark.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not the only one saying, hey, I need to make a visit to Murphy's. And is there a story behind the name Ironstone, where that came from?
Go ahead.
Not really. We had thought about naming it Angels Creek because Angels Creek runs through the property. And anyway, we tried several other names. And we finally went to a focus group who decided on the name Ironstone because it does reflect the quality of the rocks that are up there. There's a lot of iron in the rocks. So that's how it got Ironstone.
All right. There's always a story. And I'm just curious, when you had this idea and you two decided to go forward with it, was there anybody around there who said, no, this isn't going to work?
Oh, yeah, everybody. That's easy.
Was there anybody that
question?
So yeah. what do you think made the difference?
They all knew that we were crazy. And I agree, we were crazy. But we really had fun building it. And we built it from scratch. And it's amazing what we could do in those days that you can't do today. But like the caverns, we said we want caverns. So we picked a little mountain we had there in the middle of the ranch and said we'll put it on top of this mountain and we'll drill some caverns. And we'll cut the end of the mountain off. So we did. We cut the end of the mountain off, moved it, and so that we could go directly straight into the caverns. Mm-hmm. And then the winery is seven stories. So it's up on the top of the little mountain that we had there.
Mm-hmm. You're saying you don't think you could get the environmental clearance to do that anymore?
Well, it's hard to say. But see, we come in under the mining laws, and the mining laws allowed mining to go on like we did in drilling and blasting. It was the drill and blast.
Uh-huh.
So we needed one permit, and that was to have our dynamite check to hold the dynamite in. But anyway, beyond that, we didn't need any permits at all. We just moved the mountain and drilled and blasted our caverns, and we rented a bunch of equipment from Colorado. And we hired a crew that came out of Hawaii. Actually, they had drilled the tunnels in Honolulu and for the underground. And so we put together a group there and hired them and did everything in-house as we have in our old operation.
Impressive. Well, I hope a lot of people listening will come check it out if they haven't already. And I want to hear about your family's connections to the war. Gail, let's start with you because I saw a pretty good picture in the magazine of a handsome naval officer. That was your father?
That was my father, yes.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Oakland. I was a city girl, and I claim I was a country girl who was accidentally born and raised in the city.
So, true. How old were you when Pearl Harbor happened, and do you have a memory of that day?
Just very, very vague. The only thing, and I sadly don't have that many memories of my dad and his naval career just because he didn't talk about it. And I think that generation didn't, and that's something that I get on my bandstand about. You know, now write down your memories. So anyway, I do remember very clearly my dad coming up the front stairs of our house, and my mom was standing behind me, and he said, I joined the Navy. And, you know, I know what her reaction was, but, you know, it really didn't mean that much to me at the time. And as far as the memories as how the war affected us in Oakland, it really didn't. We had a blackout room that we went in when the sirens went off, as they did, and I remember sitting in there with the lights on.
So you just said, I'm sorry to interrupt, you just said it didn't really affect us, but kids today, if they had a blackout room and sirens going off, they would think it was the end of the world. That's kind of a big deal. That had to be a bit of an adjustment for you.
Well, It really wasn't, because it was the way it was. We were required to keep a bucket of sand by the front door to put out fires. And I've always wondered, you know, if your house is on fire, what good is a bucket of sand going to do? But that's another subject. And we had a vacant lot next to our house, and we spent time there as kids digging trenches in the lot. And then we'd get boards to put over the trenches and cover them with dirt. So if the enemies came, we knew where to hide.
And this wasn't just pie in the sky. I mean, that's why you're having blackouts. There's a real concern that the Japanese may hit the Bay Area.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Thankfully, that didn't happen. And I don't know about you, but it's always eye-opening for me to hear from people who lived through that time and to try to put myself in their shoes. It's time for our first break, but there's much more to come. If you pull up the Hometown Heroes page on Facebook, you'll find some photos of John and Gail Couts and those striking memorials they've added to two communities that they call home. When we come back, the impact that World War II had on their families. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties, and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 2,000 veterans will have visited their memorials for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.
Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with John and Gail Couts, the husband and wife team behind Ironstone Vineyards in Murphy's, California, not to mention Couts Family Farms. Their impact on their community includes a couple of striking statues erected to honor all veterans, past and present, for their service to our country. We've heard a little bit about that, but we want to explore a little more about the motivation behind it and their personal connections to some special World War II veterans. In Gail's case, her father, Bauer Kramer, would serve not just in the Navy, but in a new organization called the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS, predecessor to today's CIA. Gail, how much did you really know about what your dad was up to in those war years?
Well, probably after he came back, but we wanted to be with him, and he was stationed in, I think, Quonset Point, Rhode Island, and we moved back to Pennsylvania, and sometimes there were officers that came to the house, and we had to behave. I remember that. And no, I really have a very vague memory. I wish I knew more, and I wish he had told us more, but he really told us very little.
And that, as you referenced, that is the story for so many people. And so many people who listen to this show will say they love listening because it, in another veteran's story, they hear maybe a parallel to what they imagine their father or their grandfather or their uncle went through. One last question for you in that experience, and if there's anything else you want to add, feel free. But when the war was over, when your dad was back home for good, was that a pretty big deal in your family?
It was just a good feeling. I'm not sure it was a huge, you know, firecrackers going off or anything like that. He came home and life resumed. We had lived back east for a while, and fortunately we hadn't sold our house in Oakland because we decided we didn't like it back east. We wanted to come back to California. So we came back to the house, and everything resumed the way it had always been.
Well, let's talk about your family, John, because your family was affected a little more extensively.
Well, yes, but she needs to finish up with her father and what he did in the service before and after.
Well, he was a lawyer by training. Uh-huh. And so anyway, I think that that would be a question for my brother, John.
To explain what he did with the Nuremberg trials and all that?
Yes.
All right. Well, hand over the headset. We'll let John tell us. Well, John, did you have anything you want to add to what she said about your father?
Oh, well, I could just give you a little background of how he got into the OSS.
Uh-huh.
If that would be interesting.
Of course.
He had a law school classmate that graduated in 1934, the same year he did from Harvard Law School, a gentleman named John Howley. Howley went to work for a firm called Donovan and Leisure, and that was Wild Bill Donovan. And when Donovan was tapped to go and form the OSS, he brought some people out of his law firm, including Howley. And Howley heard that my dad was stationed in the area and was able to recruit my dad to come and join the Office of Strategic Services, the OSS.
And for those who aren't familiar, this is the precursor to what is now the CIA.
Correct. And Donovan's portrait hangs in the foyer of the CIA building.
He's the founder, yeah. And this, when Gail talked about your father not sharing a lot, the very nature of OSS work, they weren't even allowed to talk about of it for decades.
Occasionally, we'd see something in the newspaper years later. My dad would say, oh, yeah, I remember that from the OSS once the secret was lifted. But he'd never mentioned it before. As Gail said, it was awfully hard to get him to talk about what he did. And John Howley, his law school friend, was my godfather. And I figured I could learn more about the OSS from him, but he was every bit as reticent as my dad. Though the two of them would sit together and tell stories. They had interactions with Donovan's wingman, a guy named Ned Putzel, who was actively involved in a lot of the formation of the OSS.
So it sounds like you've studied the OSS a fair amount.
Yeah. If you've not done so, I strongly recommend reading a biography of Donovan. It's just fascinating. He had the Congressional Medal of Honor from World War I, as well as a huge number of ribbons, not only from the Americans, but from the French, British, Belgian. So he's probably one of the most decorated officers. He delighted in wearing the ribbon for the Congressional Medal of Honor because he had one, but Douglas MacArthur did not, which contributed to their enmity, which MacArthur managed to respond to by prohibiting the OSS from operating in the Philippines.
Yeah.
No laws.
It was a real rivalry. Well, I'm curious, because of what you've learned about the OSS, are there a couple questions that you'd love to ask your father if he were still here?
Well, I'd love to find more about what he did and how the extent to which his interaction in other OSS activities, it was divided into branches. I'd like to learn more about his commanding officer, which was Atherton Richards, who was from Hawaii, on the Kahoa Ranch, and was colonel and intermediate between him and Donovan. There's little in the web about Richards and what he did in the OSS, but I would have learned more about what my dad did simply by knowing what Colonel Atherton Richards did.
There's always, if you take the time to look, there's always something you're going to find.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sure you've heard about the Congressional Gold Medal being awarded to the OSS?
Yeah.
You guys could get one of those for your father's service if you wanted to have one.
Yeah, well, that'd be great. Something to look into.
But you do know, as much as you don't know, you do know that he contributed to the Nuremberg trials? Do I have that right?
Yes, he worked on several of the briefs for the Nuremberg trials. Donovan was sent over to help set up the Nuremberg trials and had staff preparing various briefs and materials, and that included stuff my dad prepared. I think he may have had more participation. I don't think he was ever trialed because the OSS wasn't actually trying the case. They were basically providing the research background for the prosecution.
And for somebody, if there's somebody listening, they've never heard of the Nuremberg trials, they don't know the details, they might not grasp the significance, I bet you can give us some perspective on that, on why you're proud of your father's contributions there.
What was the first time that war crimes were basically proven on the basis of a trial rather than simply gathering the people and shooting them, which actually was what the Brits had suggested to be done instead of the Nuremberg trials? U.S. insisted that there be a trial and that those persons who'd committed war crimes be dealt with accordingly.
And there's a legacy there that we still have today in terms of ethics.
It's a standard of international law. It's provided literally globally in the administration of justice.
The Nuremberg Code?
Well, the idea that you have a war trial and convict people on the basis of a trial rather than just outside.
Yeah. Was there anything else that you'd like to say about your father or his legacy?
I'd like to have known more about it. Interestingly, John Howley was my godfather, and I asked him about the OSS because I visited with him both in New York and here, and he was every bit as reticent as my dad was. There's just nothing much to say, though. Like I say, when he and my dad were together, they'd gossip and tell stories, and boy, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall. I was a teenager at the time, and I could care less what they were talking about now, but I sure wish I knew now.
I believe it. Well, thank you.
He did actually get over to Hawaii and visit with Atherton Richards and see the ranch, and I suspect there, too, would have been a fascinating place to find out what's going on. Richard came from an old Hawaii family, and would have been interesting stuff to learn.
Well, who knows? Someday we may have some of those blanks filled in, huh?
I'd love to.
Well, let's come back to you, John. For your family, was a Gold Star family in World War II, and not just once, but twice. I bet you have a memory. If you're 95 years old and Pearl Harbor happened a little more than 83 years ago, you would have been 11, 12 years old on December 7th, 1941. Do you remember where you were and how you found out about that?
No, I really can't. We were probably at school, I'm guessing, grammar school. But don't remember too much about that other than my parents got very excited. So anyway, a little about our family background. My parents are both immigrants. We're both immigrants. They followed Catherine the Great from Europe into the new lands of Russia and the Volga, and family located there as farmers for a couple hundred years. And then 1900, both of them independently came to the USA in 1905, 1906, and located in Scotts Bluff, Nebraska, where typically what happened in those days, one of the relatives would go someplace to find a new spot for wherever they're going to go, and then you had a trail that followed them. So they were in Scotts Bluff farming. 1923, they'd been married for about a year, lived with his parents, as his brother and their wife did, and got a job in Waterloo on a walnut ranch.
All right.
And Ira B. Langdon was the attorney that owned this little walnut ranch. And so we lived in a 700-foot house, probably never less than 10 people in the house, because they brought their brothers and sisters out and put shoes on them and got them jobs.
Mm. And how many siblings did you have?
Well, I had two sisters and a brother, and all of them went to Linden High School, actually, and Waterloo and Madison Grammar School, where I went to, and there was 8 grades, 9 students, and 1 teacher. So that's where we all cranked up from.
And Linden High School, home of the Lions, has become a little more popular in recent years. There's somebody who's brought a little attention to that little school.
There's no question about that part. And we're following baseball again, which we'd kind of given up on.
Big Aaron Judge, number
Aaron
99
Judge.
For the Yankees.
Yeah.
The MVP and the pride of Linden, California.
That's right.
So you've got one brother, an older brother. Fred was his name?
Yes.
How far apart were you guys in age?
About 8 years.
8 years older. So he probably taught you how to do a few things.
Oh, yeah. No, I started milking cows at 7 years old. So, slopping the hogs and raising all the food, as we did right on through.
And did any of the family still speak German in the home?
Yes. My sister couldn't speak English.
Wow.
In the grammar school, but I never learned German because my parents would not speak German to me. They said, we're Americans, and we only speak English. So they were very strong on that.
How did you and your brother Fred get along?
Oh, great. He was mentor to me, I guess. But, you know, families were pretty strict at that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, it must have been a pretty big deal when Fred went off to serve in the war.
Yes, it was. And, see, I had an uncle on my father's side, Uncle John, that went down to L.A. to work in the air factories. Mm-hmm. And he and actually later on when my sister married Merle Best, he also went down to work down there. So, and then my brother went down on, so all of them were down there in the airplane factories.
Wow.
Then they came back up, and my one uncle, Dan, went into the paratroopers. My uncle Vic was in the Army and went to Australia and into the war there, fighting over there in the islands. Mm-hmm. And so then my brother joined Naval Air Force.
But of those three family members who headed off to battle, only his uncle Vic came home. It's time for our final break, but when we come back, what happened to John Couts' only brother, Fred? And what about his uncle Dan, the paratrooper? Two of the more than 400,000 Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice in World War II, and the personal connection to those statues the Couts' have commissioned in Stockton and Murphy's, California. Don't forget to explore the photos and some relevant links on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. When times get tough and budgets get tight, a lot of businesses start slashing their marketing budgets, which all too often turns into a costly mistake. Instead, what if you could customize that investment to zero in on your target audience with surgical precision? And why am I saying what if? Because I already know you can with Search Strategy Marketing. It's not about how much you spend, it's about the strategy behind it. And Search Strategy Marketing is ready to prove it to you with a free, no-obligation assessment of your current efforts. Learn how to outrank your competition with a free, customized action plan just for Hometown Heroes listeners. Just go to hometownheroesradio.com and click on that light bulb logo for Search Strategy Marketing. It doesn't matter what your business is, Search Strategy Marketing can lead you to the best way to connect with your customers. So look for that light bulb logo today at hometownheroesradio.com and plug into the power that can take your business to the next level. When prices start going up, we all look for ways to save. So here's a simple message for you. Look no further than EECU. Did you know you can finance your mortgage through EECU? How about a home equity line of credit? EECU makes HELOC loans easy. And when the car business is all over the map, the auto loan rates are as steady as can be. EECU is a not-for-profit credit union, not a bank. So the members always win. Go to myeecu.org to become a member today or call 1-800-5
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode with a little different feel today. Instead of hearing from a World War II veteran himself, we've been listening to the children of one World War II veteran and the brother of another. Every September, more than 300 antique and classic cars converge on the Gold Country hamlet of Murphy's, California, for the Ironstone Concours d'Elegance. The Ironstone Amphitheater is the premier concert venue in the area, and none of that would be there without the couple we've been getting to know today, John and Gail Couts. But if you only have time to visit one spot in Murphy's, they would tell you to make a beeline for the Ebbets Pass Veterans Memorial, where a giant boulder provides the foundation for a nearly 8-foot-tall bronze statue of a soldier, there to honor every man and woman, past and present, who has ever served in our armed forces. But inspired not just by Gail's father and so many others who returned from World War II, but also two Gold Star heroes who didn't. Two men that John Couts knew very well. John, when we left off, you told us that your brother and two of your uncles had headed off to war. You were too young to serve at the time, and you were still in California going to school. I'm just imagining it wasn't exactly easy to get much information about what all those family members were up to overseas.
No, it really wasn't. You didn't get much information. I, as a young boy, would go with my father out on parole. We'd get in a blind and then record any airplanes that came over and any action, and he'd have to report in to that.
Yeah.
That's here in Waterloo.
Uh-huh. So you were part of the war effort, too.
Well, in a way.
You were watching the skies.
Anyway, we did do a lot in the food arena and raising food and send. We were very heavily involved in our church, our Lutheran church. And then I went on into scouting and actually had and scouting in Live Oak when we moved to Lodi area. Our scoutmasters would come in and be there for a while and be off to the service. So we experienced those entries like that.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because we get so used to routine in life, and sure seems like there was nothing routine in those days. Everything was changing all the time.
Correct. Still is.
So your brother goes off to war, and he's flying the Navy's version of the B-24? Is that
correct?
Right? Privateers?
Correct.
What was his position on those crews?
Tail gunner.
Tail gunner. Not the safest job in the world.
He was stationed in Manila.
Uh-huh.
And really liked it. I mean, as far as the camp and everything. And he and my one cousin communicated a lot back and forth. So they used to swim and dive and everything. And so, but they had a good camp as far as that goes. But then his team all came back, but he volunteered to another squad that didn't come back.
So the crew that he normally flew with...
Right, correct.
...came back home.
Yes.
He got assigned to another crew. He volunteered to serve with another crew.
Correct.
And ended up getting shot down.
Correct.
Have you been able to glean any of the details about what happened that day?
Not a lot. They were apparently on a mission, and... bombing mission, and those are low flying aircraft that took targets out in on the island area, China Sea, and then he went missing, and that was the hardest part. Went missing for about 3 years.
So your family got a telegram.
Right.
Do you remember that day?
Oh, yeah. More than that, my mother told us before we got the letter.
She had a feeling?
She knew it. And she knew my uncle when he went down too.
Wow. And I want to understand correctly, and thank you for sharing this with us. I know it's not easy to talk about, even 80 years later. I want to make sure I understand correctly. You're saying your mother, both when your uncle was killed in action and when your brother was killed in action, before hearing anything from the government or anyone else, she had an inclination.
Yes.
Wow. An intuition of some kind.
Yeah. Wow. So anyway, I did not go into the service because I was too young for World War II.
Right.
And then I became a Gold Star son, sole surviving. And so I was not eligible to go in. That was pretty hard, too, because my buddies all went in.
Yeah. And as you say that, I can see in your eye that you wanted to go in. They wouldn't let you.
Sorry.
No. So, first you hear from the government, missing in action.
Correct. And then when they did find the plane, they were all mixed up, so they sent three of them back together, and they put them in a cemetery in Missouri, and never did separate it out. So they were all there together.
So that's where your brother is?
Yeah.
And where did they find the plane?
It was on an island off the China Keys. Actually, a lot of that information is in the book, and so it's accurate. Uh-huh. Kevin Starr was superb at getting facts right, etc. Wrote the book.
I hope this question comes out right. I'm thinking of the families, and I know a few of them. In fact, one who was flying the same kind of plane in the same general area. Hmm. Where their plane's never been recovered, and his uncle's never been brought home, and they even believe they know where the plane is, but because of some world geopolitics, they're not given access to go get it. Hmm. I'm just thinking of those families who, all these years later, are still waiting for some kind of answers. So for you and your family, what did that mean when they actually found the plane? They located your brother's remains and brought him back to the States.
It was relief. Definite relief. Because other than that, you always had hope. Mm. And they did find people here and there.
Yeah.
That had been lost. One of them lost 15, 20 years later, they found him. He was still in the jungle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hiding.
I don't want to put words in your mouth or thoughts in your head. I'm just interested in your genuine experience. But going through that, being such a young man, when your brother... It's one of more than 400,000 who makes the ultimate sacrifice in World War II, being told that you aren't allowed to serve as a result. Did that experience, going through all that, do you feel like that changed the way you've lived since then?
Sure.
How so? What are the impacts that you would see? What has it changed?
Oh, I think just very conscious of a lot of things. We wanted to do something for him, and that's when we decided with John Cobalt, the sculptor, to redo the Murphy's Ebbets Pass Veterans Park, and so we expanded it as our family as a unit and made a beautiful park out of it, and the 7-foot-7-inch bronze statue is there on a 16-ton rock. It's well received by the community. We had over 1,000 people came to its opening. And we had Captain Irv Williams as a speaker. Irv was a fellow Bohemian, and he served 6.5 years in Hanoi Hilton prison with John McCain. Then we had Dan Burst, who's an astronaut, and he was a friend of the sculptures as well as us then. Dan had the distinction of walking entirely around Earth twice in 3.5 hours, tethered to spaceship number 4, where he was repairing it.
Uh-huh.
So it was well received there, and we're going to get them both back again for the 10th anniversary of that park.
When is that?
Coming up in November.
This November, okay.
And then we enjoyed doing what we did there at Murphy's. We decided we needed one here in Lodi as well, so we went to Mickey's Grove and built a second memorial there. So very proud of it.
You should be. And I'm sure your brother and your uncle would be too. And I do want to hear a little more about your uncle, because every gold star has a story. And there's actually an effort ongoing right now. It's called Stories Behind the Stars, where there's a nationwide network of volunteers trying to write the story of every single American who was killed in action in World War II.
Well, that's great.
But I do have to ask you a question about your brother, and I don't know if it's an easy one to answer. I'm sure you've thought about it a time or two in all these years. If your brother had made it home from the war, what kinds of things do you think he would have done or accomplished, or what kind of guy you think he would have been?
Well, we were already preparing for his coming back. We'd bought 40 acres on Live Oak Road. That was going to be his farm. So that was our plan on that. I think he would have come back and been an excellent farmer.
And tell me about your uncle. So he was a paratrooper.
Right. Michael Dan Lai, L-E-I, paratrooper, went down in France on D-Day. My Uncle Vic, as I say, was over in Australia and in the islands over there, got malaria, got beat up pretty good on his legs and getting on and off of the boat, landing craft. But anyway, Vic came back.
Yeah. But are you saying Dan was killed on June 6th?
There was some kind of a skirmish or something that he was killed in.
Boy, I guess this seems like a cliche, but I think you would have perspective on this, because people talk about the price of freedom. Sure seems like your family has some perspective on the price of freedom.
No question. That's why we really love what's going on right now. Without getting too political on this at this time, but we're thrilled.
Maybe tell me this. When you look at the flag, especially on a windy day on top of the mountain out there at Ironstone, you look at that flag rippling in the breeze, what do you think of?
I think it's wonderful. Wonderful.
And have you been to the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah. We've been there, and we've been also to the one in New Orleans.
Museum, yeah.
Governor Wilson was, and is, a very close friend. And he was heavily involved in getting that memorial started. So when Governor Wilson was governor here, he appointed me as president of the State Board of Food and Ag. And then from that point, lots of other things, but anyway, and Gil also was heavily involved that way politically.
Well, and I'm not trying to belabor the point. I'm just imagining being in your shoes and being at that National World War II Memorial in Washington, where there's that whole wall of gold stars, and it says, here we mark the price of freedom. What did you think about when you were looking at that?
Well, I guess it gave inspiration to do the wall. We did a wall in Murphy's, and we also did one in Mickey's Grove, honoring servicemen, etc. But we have to remember what it's all about. No question.
We have to remember what it's all about. That kind of sums up the sentiment behind every episode of Hometown Heroes. It's important and it's powerful to say it, but John and Gail Kautz have gone beyond just saying it by commissioning those statues in Murphy's and Stockton to help the rest of us hold on to that perspective. Thanks to the Kautzes, as well as Gail's brother John Kramer, for adding to our perspective today, and thanks again to Carrie Sass of Her Life magazine for connecting us to him. You can link to that magazine article at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, where you're also going to find some other photos relating to this special Gold Star family. And knowing what they look like may come in handy the next time you visit Ironstone Vineyards. Maybe you can pass on a little gratitude in your own words. That's all the time we have on today's program, but thank you so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping to reinforce those four words that the poignant reflections we heard today made crystal clear. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.